Welcome to Intersection Live, the tax and accounting profession's premier podcast source, provided by the CPA Technology Advisor and ADP Small Business Services, supporting the accountant community. This is Tech to Go, a monthly fast-paced roundtable discussion with executive editor Darren Root and regular columnists of the CPA Technology Advisor. These thought leaders tackle current technology issues impacting the tax and accounting profession.
Hi, this is Darren Root, the executive editor of the CPA Technology Advisor, and you are listening to episode 37 of Tech to Go. I'd like to thank our corporate sponsor, ADP, for today's podcast. We're going to be talking about a couple of different things today. We're going to be talking a little bit about Facebook, Twitter, and how that's being handled in the corporate world today. We're also going to talk about, being that it's tax season and our systems are very critical, we're going to talk about backup and data recovery. So a couple of great topics for today. But before we get started, I'd like to introduce and welcome my guests, my co-host. First one's Randy Johnston, principal with K2 Enterprises. Welcome, Randy.
Thanks, Darren. Good morning to all.
And second, I have Dave McClure, who is the president of the U.S. Internet Industry Association. So, Dave, welcome.
Good morning. Good to be with you again.
So, gentlemen, a lot going on. Dave, out in your neck of the woods, I guess not necessarily Virginia, but there was an election recently in Boston, or at least in Massachusetts, that has changed things just a bit.
Closely watched election, and no matter where you fall in the political spectrum, we know that it's going to have a tremendous impact on all of the things that are sitting in Washington. Healthcare, obviously, they're going to have to go back and rethink that. But also, there's a whole slate of tech stuff that could potentially be impacted now that the Democrats no longer have a bulletproof majority in the Senate.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Did you guys watch a lot of that, Randy? I kind of watched it unfold the other night. Did you watch much of it?
Didn't watch much of it, but did read the analysis afterwards and listen to a number of the quotes by the loser and the winner. So it should change the legislative tone for some time to come, which, I'm an oddity on this one. I actually like balance. I don't like extremism on either side. So maybe that'll help move us a little that way.
Yeah, I think I'm in that corner as well. So, gentlemen, let's kind of kick off. I'm going to kick off with you today, Dave. You and I, before we started here, the three of us were talking a little bit about Facebook and Twitter, and I mentioned that I'm starting to get pinged by a lot of companies that want me to join their Facebook page. So, Dave, tell me what you think's going on here.
Well, Facebook is part of the phenomenon, and it's really very interesting how it actually began with MySpace, or earlier than that if you want to go back to some of the stuff AOL was doing with chat rooms. But really, social networking came into its own with MySpace, but MySpace has been usurped by Facebook. I know I've got a page up there, and lots of other people have pages. And the next extension to that, then, is to try to tap into the business market. And so we're beginning to see lots of organizations saying, wow, if you're doing fundraising, you should be on Facebook. If you need to do corporate communications, you should be on Facebook. I'm not sure that's a good idea. And the reason I don't think it's a good idea is privacy. Privacy is a huge issue and an ownership of the data. I mean, Facebook
itself. What privacy things, Dave, are alarming to you?
You don't own your data. They do. When you put data up on Facebook, it becomes the property of Facebook. And they recently made an effort to revamp and virtually eliminate what few privacy restrictions they did have in place on Facebook. I guess my biggest concern is a concern I have with so many of these companies, and Google's a good example, the chief example. If you don't know how they're making money by selling your data, because that's the only business model they've got. So at some point, and you have to look at this primarily with any company that is owned by Google, because that's Google's bread and butter. That's how they make their money. And they're very upfront about it. It's not like they're trying to deceive you, but the fact is most people don't read those end-user licensing agreements. They don't read the privacy statements. They want to get on with it, so they just click and go. And I think that's a deadly thing for a corporation to do.
So, Randy, do you share some of the same concerns?
Well, I think he is dead on a number of these issues, because Google has some of those same issues as well. So if you think about most of the social media companies, the license agreement says, look, we own the data. We have the rights to do with the data as we choose. I think the second issue that's in the same realm of security is just actually applying security settings correctly. Because, one of the things we actually cautioned our team at our annual strategic planning meeting this week was, if you're in here, make sure you get the security settings right and let us teach you the security settings if you don't have those right, because the default shares too much information and you may want to be more locked down. So strategically, what we normally ask is that the marketing person of the business be proactively involved with these areas, but that you think carefully about broadly opening it up for everyone at work. By the same token, you will also have users who will become renegade users at work as you try to block the services in the firm, because, you know, they want to be able to get to their kids' pictures or grandkids' pictures or whatever it is while they're at work. And if you don't allow it through normal access with the firewall, they'll come some other method, whether it's a remote connection, a handheld, or whatever. So I think it's actually better to be proactive with your policy that says, here's our current position. But it's also pretty wise to warn people of both the security risks and the privacy risks, as Dave's pointed out.
So I guess I have a little confusion here. I'm thinking that, you know, my kids, or let's say I have a personal Darren Root Facebook page. That's my personal one. But I also may want to have one for RootWorks in my case. Are we talking about both guys? Or are we talking about the company one? What are we talking about?
Well, I jump in and say, first of all, I'm not really talking about your personal pages. Facebook was designed to handle personal pages, and as Randy pointed out, if you have set your settings properly to control who has access to that information, then you're probably going to be okay. I've had to rethink a little bit what specific information I want to put up on my page. I don't have, for example, photos of my grandchildren and their names and where they go to school and all of those things, because that's tempting fate. You just don't need to be stupid about personal information like that. But for the most part, I don't have a problem with it from a personal standpoint. From a company standpoint, first of all, other than just being lazy and not wanting to do the work to set up a real website, what is the benefit to a company? What are they being on Facebook?
You know, what I'm seeing is a way of doing some viral marketing. You know, in our accounting firm, we do work for a photography studio that targets seniors in high school. So they do their senior pictures. And this particular company used to spend up to 50, 60 grand a year in marketing, sending out nice brochures and all this sort of stuff. Well, being that the high school kids seem to all be on Facebook, they've now pivoted to doing 100% of their marketing through Facebook and cut out that cost, and sales have gone up. So there, to me, is a direct benefit to business in using it as sort of a viral marketing sort of position. Thoughts?
Well, you know, I think, Darren, you've heard me say it a few times, and I know thousands of people around the country heard me say this during 2009, and I intend to keep saying in 2010, that social media is such a large marketing opportunity, you can't ignore it. It helps with your search engine placement. It is more cost effective. It is in many ways more effective, and it should at least be one of the strategies that you're using. So your example of the photography student doing all their promotion through social media, particularly with the high school crowd, makes great sense. But for our listeners, if you consider that the average age in Facebook right now is about 37 years old, that the average user has a college education, and that many are business owners, that's really a pretty good target demographic. So, again, you don't want to be doing what I would call blatant promotion out there, but I think you can do expertise promotion, that you can do positioning and so forth quite effectively through this. And I think you've got to proactively say, I need to market this way. How can I get it done that is time effective and price effective?
Well, and maybe that's the key to it, Darren, is to be very cautious about how you intend to use Facebook. Facebook is not a replacement for the World Wide Web. It is not an effective way for you to conduct corporate communications, for example. And to some extent also, you should be very cautious about using something like Twitter. Again, because your lists, your mailing lists, your distribution lists, your communication lists, can so easily be suborned for other purposes that you may not want to have done. So I guess I would agree for viral marketing, it probably makes a sense for some kinds of companies. But for other kinds of communications and for general corporate sites, I still think the World Wide Web makes a whole lot more sense. You have better control over your data.
But Dave, when you brought this topic up when we were talking before, I think there needs to be some parameters put around how Facebook is going to be handled in a company, from the corporate page standpoint. I mean, we're not going to let just any employee go out there and run an ad in the newspaper for us or put it in a magazine. So I think
right.
We have to treat Facebook very similar to that, and somebody has to own that and lock that down and know what's going to be there, because if we think about it as a marketing tool, then we've got to treat it as such like we would any of our other marketing, don't you think?
Well, that's probably the best summary that I've heard yet when it comes to Facebook, and that is, if you are going to use it, make sure you are using it as part of a concerted strategy that has been thought through, and you know exactly how you're going to use it and exactly what the parameters are, and someone takes responsibility for it. I think that's a great summary.
And, so just one other driving factor for any of our listeners, just so you've got a reference point, the quickest way I can get you there is through Dr. Bob Spencer's site, which is 20 seconds in the future, tsif.com. And he and I have actually accumulated a number of social networking policies on that site. Our favorite one to date is the IBM social networking policy, but we also want to take note that state societies, notably the Missouri Society of CPAs, has published a social networking policy example. So for CPAs and CPA firms, you've actually got some pretty direct guidance about what the policy should contain. And, again, we want you to be thinking strategically about this and not necessarily reactively. So if we can get you in proactive mode as part of your marketing program, what a great use of social networking. If it's a waste of time, kind of like pools in the office and water cooler conversations, we don't want social networking to be a time consumer or a resource consumer inside the office.
So, Randy, could you give that website again? Because I think there are whole lots of people who would love to have that kind of input.
Yeah, it'll be in our program notes, but it's TSIF, as in 20 seconds in the future, tsif.com. And Dr. Bob does a nice job on that, and we actually concluded we were going to put all of the social networking things that we have there for a little bit.
Sounds good. Well, it sounds like, this is a topic that's going to continue to be in the forefront. Just on a side note, we're currently RootWorks, and actually the CPA Technology Advisor, we've both entered a study that Indiana University is doing around social media. There's some PhD students writing a book at the university, and we entered a study We think it's going to be a good process for us to learn how all this social media kind of works and how it's coming together and how to be thinking about it for the future. So I'm pretty interested in going through that process. We just started. Well, with that in mind, guys, let's talk a little bit about, you know, we're in the middle of, well, I wouldn't say the middle, but we're at the beginnings of busy season for most of our listeners. And Randy, recently I had you come to my office and spend a day with me in your role with your network management group to take a look at our servers and everything, because, you know, we've had periodic backup troubles and, you know, we've had servers crash before and things like that. So that was a real good experience for me. I wanted to spend some time today just talking about backups and data recovery, if you can kind of lay some groundwork for us.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, Darren. And you know, a fundamental issue that has to be handled correctly in all businesses, not just CPA firms, but all businesses, is getting backup right every day, unattended, reliable, rock solid, perfect. And as you think through your strategies on this, you still have time to execute some of these even before busy season, but there's probably at least three different levels to consider here. One of those is traditional backups to tape and hard drive type of approaches. There's a little more risk on some of those because of getting the media off-site, because of having to check the server logs and so forth. But at this point, I'm fundamentally against using tape backup because it is so prone to failure and so expensive. Prefer hard drive backups over that. But what's evolved in the industry over the last couple of 3 years is internet or web-based backups. And there's two varieties here that I'd like to have some thought given to. One of those is a web-based backup. There's a lot of competitors here. My favorite reference product for this is a company out of Canada called Abacus, Abaxio, which has a very nice, well-secured web-enabled backup that allows you to move data off-site. The vendor correctly claims that they can move 2 to 4 terabytes over the web in backup fairly effectively on a T1 or a 1.5 megabit line. That's one strategy. The second strategy, which is the one that we recommended for you, Darren, was an appliance. And there's lots of competitors on these appliances, but what you wind up with is a computer that allows backup on either a regular basis, once every 15 minutes, let's say, or once a day basis, if you like it that way. And then once the backup is done to this appliance, it automatically can push the data off-site. For smaller firms, and my network management group company, I consider a smaller firm, I have 125 gig of data in our operation, and once it's compressed, it takes about 50 gig of storage, and we pay an annual fee in the $1,000 to $1,500 range. It does vary by the amount of capacity, but the beauty of the appliance is really maybe threefold. The ability to back up on an almost continuous basis. We've got our set, so we copy every 15 minutes, so we lose no more than 15 minutes work if we had a catastrophic server failure. Number two, on the appliance itself, we can run our server or servers. So again, if we had a server hardware failure, we could still keep our Exchange server or our tax server or our audit servers and so forth. We could keep those running on the appliance. And then we get the added benefit of the backup off-site, which means if we lose our building because of a fire or something like that, we can ship an appliance to an alternate location and or run in the cloud itself. Backup appliances, well, depends on the capacities and features. The base hardware price tends to run from about $1,500 up to about $4,500. And it normally costs about $1,000 to $2,000 to have them installed first-time, one-time fee. Backup appliances are not trivial to put in, but they're not horribly hard. Usually it might take you 7 to 10 days to get one of those implemented correctly once you make the decision to get that done. But backup appliances, to me, have really fundamentally changed the game, eliminating local tape and local removable hard drive backup strategies as options from a price perspective just doesn't make sense.
So, Randy, let me kind of rephrase, at least from my perspective. I'm not what I would call technically challenged, but I'm certainly not in your category. So I'm somewhere here in the middle, and I probably am somewhat representative of a lot of the profession, although I may be a little bit farther ahead than some of our listeners in the profession. But, you know, my number one biggest asset in my accounting firm is my data. I would put that at the top of the list. And I think most of our listeners think they have a backup strategy. They're trusting somebody, typically outside their organization, to set a backup strategy in place. And then they really don't revisit that backup ever at all. Every day they're taking home a tape or they're doing something, and they're not thinking about it until tragedy strikes and they really need it, right? So what I want to encourage our listeners to do today is listen to what you're saying is, you know, if we have all of our data on a machine, what you're really talking about, Randy, is another machine, we're calling the net rescue, what do you call that?
A backup appliance.
So we have this backup appliance, another machine really sitting in our office, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So it's backing up over to that other machine on a regular basis, as you mentioned, maybe every 15 minutes. Then at night is the strategy not to take data from that and take it over the web to a location remotely in case of a fire, let's say.
Yes. And in
is that the strategy you're really talking about?
That is the strategy. And in your case, Darren, and in my NMGI case, that data is actually replicated to a data center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, automatically replicated to another SAS 70 data center in Phoenix, Arizona, and to a third data center in Colorado Springs. So there's actually three secured offsite copies of that data, which could be recovered if your entire office was destroyed.
Is that backup appliance backing up everything that's on a server typically? Everything that's on the firm's, let's say, data storage area?
Yes. In fact, the strategy with the backup appliance is to not only back up all the data of all kinds on the servers, but to also have all of the applications backed up as well. So, you could turn on the appliance and run everything, assuming you've lost all your servers, all your hard drives in your servers, assuming you've really lost everything. Once in a while, Darren, we'll go so far as to back up some of the desktops as well, but strategically we encourage businesses not to put data on their laptops or desktops, but to keep that data centralized on the servers. So in most of our implementations, we really only focus on backing up the servers as opposed to backing up the desktops.
And I think in our firm, Randy, one of the things we did is we took it one step further, and we've actually asked, in our case, network management group to actually look at our backups on a regular basis and make sure, you know, everything's great.
Yes.
Which I think is a step a lot of people miss.
Yes, in fact, that was one of the things. There's a trend in the technology industries in general for what's known as business continuity services or managed services, and I think this works really well on both small and large businesses. Medium businesses maybe a little less well, but the idea here is that you may not have any IT people on staff, or you may want to assign IT people to higher value activities, and there are automated software tools that can actually monitor a lot of these processes. And so what we actually do for your business, Darren, is I have both software and people that every day look at the backup logs to make sure that everything's completed correctly and so forth. And that really gives the assurance that, to the best of our knowledge, everything is working correctly. Strategically, what we recommend is that a couple of times a year, you actually do a test restore to make sure that everything's working properly. And this test restore process we've recommended for decades, 30 plus years, but many businesses never take the time to make sure that the backup that they actually have is working. So intermittently, doing a test restore is a wise choice also.
So Dave, you've been sitting on the sidelines here as Randy and I talk through this. What's your take on what we're talking about here?
Yeah, I tend to agree. The whole backup game has changed so dramatically over just the past couple of years, in part due to the fact that, storage costs, hard drive costs, have dropped so dramatically. We're looking at, a terabyte drive going for $125. That's insane amount of storage. So you can afford now not only to do the backups, but as Randy points out, more effectively to do it off-site, where you know that if there's a flood or a tornado or a fire, your data is still secure. A lot of people just don't pay that much attention to it. I know I've been with several companies that never tested their backups until they needed their backups, and then they didn't have them. They discovered, sadly, to their shock and horror, that the backup that they had just didn't work. And backups, even if they're done, are typically done on a 24-hour cycle, so you can easily lose, and they're done at night, which means you could easily lose a full day's work, which would be, in today's environment, catastrophic, I think, for many companies.
Yeah, and well, this has really been a...
restore...
Go ahead,
I'm
Darren.
Sorry, Randy, go ahead.
Okay, and this has really been the...
If you can't restore your data, that number one biggest asset that you have, then, I mean, you're really betting the farm.
Yeah, and this has been a concern for me because so many of us think our IT outsource company or our IT people have the backups done correctly, and it's the day that you can't restore you realize that you've just lost a major asset, been highly disruptive to your organization, and it really today is so inexpensive to fix this, it's just almost an unconscionable management decision not to have taken care of it.
And I agree with that.
All right, so Randy, most of our listeners don't get this, by and large. I'm gonna step on a limb and say that. I mean, I don't know that, but I'm going to assume most of them don't really understand what they should be doing. So what's the best resource that you can point them to get information on how to think about this?
Well, I wish there was a good comprehensive one, Darren, and you really put me exactly in the spot I should be in. I actually do have off of my NMGI website a business continuity page, but as part of our discussion around this, I will actually create a small article in this area and post it where it's accessible, and we'll try to let our listeners know in a future time frame, here's a nice simple summary of this. Today you can actually find this at my NMGI site at nmgi.com. And when you visit that, there's actually a business continuity section. But, you know, there's two or three things. There's really backup appliances, and another good discussion future topic is just business continuity in general. And we tend to blend those together because we want to recover a business no matter what. But for us, most of this will be under business continuity, net rescue, disaster recovery.
Well, guys, we're about out of time today. I appreciate you guys both taking the time. You know, I think a couple of good topics that we've discussed today. Really passionate about what's going on with Facebook and also with data recovery and backup. So thank you very much, Randy and Dave. Any closing thoughts?
No, I hope everybody has the most successful tax season ever, and that we look forward to talking with all of you within the next month.
Yeah, great. And I look forward to, you know, we've touched a lot on security and backup issues. Maybe next time talking about uninterruptible power supplies, because that's another white-hot topic and a place that some people will want to invest with their post-tax season dollars.
Yeah, Dave, you're right, because
I think that's
fundamentals that just aren't getting executed, like backup and UPS.
I agree. Yep.
Well, Randy, I know that you know, that was one of the first things you looked at in our office when you came, so I think that's a good topic for next time, so let's keep that on our list.
Superb.
Well, gentlemen, have a great rest of the week and weekend, and we will talk next month.
Thanks so much.
See you next month.
Good day
Bye-bye.
To all.
The CPA Technology Advisors Intersection Live podcast series is brought to you by ADP Small Business Services, supporting the accountant community. For more information about the CPA Technology Advisors' other podcast programs, webcasts, and our e-newsletter, visit cpatechnologyadvisor.com. To ask questions or leave comments about our podcasts, Call 800-456-0864, extension 2106. Or tune in to future episodes where you're able to ask questions live via TalkShoe.com.